ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Repeat after me. Om Vasudevendra Yogindram. Vasudevendra Yogindram. Natva Jnana Pradangurum. Natva Jnana Pradangurum. Mumukshunam Hitarthaya. Mumukshunam Hitarthaya. Tattva Bodho Bhidhiyate. Bodho Bidhiyate. Karna Shariram Kim. Karna Shariram Kim. Anirvacha. Anirvacha. Anadi, anadi, avidya rupam, avidya rupam, sharira dvayasya, karna matram, karna matram, sat, sat, swarupa ajnanam. Swarupa ajnanam, nirvikalpaka rupam, nirvikalpaka rupam, yadasti, yadasti, tatkaranam shariram, tatkaranam shariram. So we were looking at the sukshma sharira and the stula sharira these last few classes. And we saw the nature of the stula sharira, and we saw the nature of the sukshma sharira, at least much of it. We saw that it was apanchikrita panchamahabhutahikritam sat karmajam janyam sukhatukadi bhogasadhanam panchajnanendriyani panchakarmendriyani panchapranadayaha unashchaikam buddhishchaika evam saptadasha kalabhihi Saha yat tishtati tat sukshma shariram. That is the sukshma sharira, which is created from the five subtle elements, which is born of karmapalam, which is the sadhana, the means for the experience of sukha and dukkha, pleasant and unpleasant experiences, which is includes the pancha jnanendriyani, the five senses of perception, the pancha karmendriyani, the five capacities for action, the pancha pranadayaha, the manas and the buddhi, along with these 17 things, that which remains, along with these 17 things, that is the sukshma sharira. So then we went on and saw what the five senses were, what the five capacities for action were, what their domains were, and what the corresponding devatas were for each of these. Now, he's about to jump on to what is the karna shariram, but he didn't mention a couple of items. He didn't explicitly state what the pancha pranas are, what the five pranas are, and he didn't explicitly state what the mind or the buddhi was, the manas or the buddhi. Now, we covered the manas and the buddhi a couple classes ago. But let's go ahead and review what these pranas are. Maybe there's a piece of the text that got lost, and that's why it's not included. Maybe the student who was taking these notes was sick one day. Some people feel like some of these texts that we have are really students' notes, and they were transcribing what they heard in class. A lot of the textbooks that we get of Pooja Swamiji's, often the books are transcriptions and edited transcriptions from classes. I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, but you can imagine that they were perhaps sick that day, didn't make it to class, couldn't get the recording, and so the section is left out. Or maybe the goat ate it. These were all on palm leaves before, and goats will eat anything. I'm sure there's an obscenely large number of texts that have been lost to goats. I'm hoping that maybe one page got lost. But these five Puranas, collectively they're called Prana. But the first of which is called Prana. So when we talk about Prana, we either mean respiration, which when we do pranayama is the control of the incoming and outgoing breath and the retention of that breath through these yogic breathing exercises. Collectively, they're called prana. Individually, the first one is respiration. So they are prana, apana, dhyana, udana, samana. Very briefly, prana, as I said, is respiration. Apana has to do with evacuation. These are often can be seen as ways to look at the autonomic nervous system. These are mostly things that enliven the body, enable the body to function, but they're not something that we have a lot of direct control over. Prana, breathing, we have some direct control over, but sooner or later it gets the better of us. If we try to hold our breath, we only have so much capacity to control that, and then it takes over because it's such a strong force. It's such a vital process for our living. So to the evacuation, excretion, sweat, urine, kidneys, the waste removal, all of that is apana. You know, we have some control over that, but yet it will make its urgency known if we don't attend to things. So even the whole cleansing system, purification system, is part of apana. Dhyana is the circulation of the blood and of the food and of the energy. If our food just stayed in our stomach, it wouldn't do as much good. They say that if our food just stayed in our stomachs would grow, but our bodies would wither because our limbs wouldn't be getting any food. Fourth one is udana, which is a curious one. It's a reversal of the normal processes. It accounts for involuntary activities, usually such as vomiting. It's normal for our food to stay down. If it doesn't stay down and reverses its normal functions, normal trajectory, that is udana. So to sneezing, right? We need to get something out of our nose. Let's say the dust gets into our nose and we sneeze. That is udana. It's also responsible for the time of death. What happens at the time of death, all the functions of the pranas start reversing. You see a withdrawal of all the karmendriyani, jnanendriyani, people withdraw from their mind, and it's responsible for the death process as well. And then lastly, there's samana, digestion. And this digestion is a digestion, we know, the fire of digestion. Now, these may sound familiar if you do puja, because in Naivedyam, you know, there's the traditional 16-step puja, where there is an initial purification steps, there's the sankalpa, there's the invocation of the Lord in a specific form. Puja is a physical act of prayer. Actions can be mental, verbal, or physical. They can be manasa, vachika, and kayika. And so the mental activities, the verbal activities, and the physical activities, these notions apply also to prayer. So prayer can be purely mental, just doing japa, for example. It can be verbal. It could be chanting rudram. It can be singing shlokas or bhajan. It can be doing japa aloud. Or it can be physical, kayika, with the body. And puja is a way to express devotion and invoke the inner devotee through physical actions, through ritual, through beautiful ritual. And traditionally, there are 16 steps in this puja. We'll go over that one day. After you've offered him clothes and yajnapavitam, sandalwood and kumkum, flowers, and then there's offering of the dhupam and the deepam, and you offer food. Naivedyam. And these pranas are referred to in Naivedyam. So one version of offering this is to chant Gayatri, sprinkle water over the food, and then offer the Lord. Offer Om Pranaya Swaha Ah, Om Apanaya Swaha Ah, Om Dhyanaya Swaha Ah, Om Udanaya Swaha Ah, Om Samanaya Swaha Ah, Om Brahmane Swaha Ah, Naivedyam Nivedayami. And with each of those swahas, you offer, you bring the food to the Lord, and as though you're feeding him as an honored guest. This whole 16-step puja is meant to reflect how a respected, honored guest would be welcomed in a very beautiful and formal way. What is going on here? We've invoked the Lord into a particular murti, into a particular form. And in that form, we treat the Lord as though an individual. And it's a recognition that these vital forces that keep us alive are functions that are not different than the Lord. So when we offer all these to the Lord, we're actually offering our own life force to the Lord. So the last one, the sixth one that we say is Brahmane Swaha. And then Brahmane means to Brahman, right? So these Aya, Pranaya, Apanaya, Vyanaya, Udanaya, Samanaya, that's all the fourth case. That means to the Pranas, to the Apana, to Vyana, to Udana, to Samana, I offer this food. And the last one is Brahmane, to Brahman, to Hiranyagarbha. So at both the Vyashti and the Samashti level, both at the microcosm and macrocosmic level, we're offering this life-giving food in the puja to the Lord. So for each of the individual pranas, and then for the collective pranas, the collectivity, the collective subtle pranas of the whole subtle world is referred to as Hiranyagarbha. So just as we have, as individuals, have a sukshma sharira, you can think of Bhagawan as Ishvara having a sukshma sharira, and that can be referred to as Hiranyagarbha. And in this prayer, it's Brahmane, that's what you're offering. The whole Vyashti and then finally the Samashti, you're offering this life-giving food to. And in fact, there's different ways to say grace. I don't know exactly how it's referred to in India. And the West would say, oh, we're saying grace. One of the very humorous versions of that is something like, past the teeth and over the gums, watch out stomach, here it comes. That's a very ungraceful grace. Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts which we are about to receive. Beautiful, simple. In India, at the Gurukulam, we would chant the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita every day at lunch, and then a somewhat modified version of that in the evening for grace, for remembering the Lord before we eat. It's a very beautiful practice to remember Bhagawan before you eat, because it allows you not only to be thankful, it allows you not only to see the whole process of eating as a prayer, but also allows your mind to be very present during the eating process. And you can see this whole offering of food to your own body for the sake of keeping the body alive, for the sake of gaining moksha. So with that in mind, there's a certain prayer. There's a couple of prayers that would do regardless of what meal it is. The most common one, as many people know, is Brahmarpanam Brahma Havihi Brahma Gnau Brahmanahutam Brahmaivatena Gantavyam Brahma Karma Samadhina, which is a verse from the Gita which teaches that in a Vedic yajna, in a fire sacrifice, you're offering oblations into the fire. Everything concerning that sacrifice, that offering, that ritual is Brahman, is really the truth. The offering is Brahman, and the offerer is Brahman, and the means by which something is offered is Brahman, and the fire is Brahman. There's only one vastu, there's only one true thing. And the one who sees that one truth in all action, he goes to Brahman. By him, Brahman is gained, meaning one gains the knowledge of the truth of oneself. One gains tattva-bodha. So this is a very beautiful and common prayer done before eating. There's another prayer that's done before eating, oftentimes by some, that includes these pranas. And it's the same thing that's done in the puja. You would take some water in your hand, and you would chant the Gayatri, and you'd purify your food by sprinkling water on the food and around the food. You do achamanam, and then you take one grain of rice, pranaya swaha, another grain of rice, om apanaya swaha, om vyanaya swaha, om udanaya swaha, and you offer it to yourself. as if you were offering it to Bhagawan during puja. Om Brahmane Swaha. And it's a very beautiful vision of recreating that same devotional kaika, physical action, that physical prayer that you do in the morning to Bhagawan, you do to yourself, because there is no difference at any level between you and Bhagawan. It's a very beautiful usage of these, a reference of these five pranas. And then lastly, the ones that he doesn't explicitly state here, of the 17 parts. So we have five jnanendriyani, the five sense capacities, five karmendriyani, which are the five capacities for action. We have these five pranas. Now that is 15, right? Lastly, we have, to make 17, we have the manas and the buddhi. And the manas is a sankalpa vikalpatmaka antakarana vritti. And the buddhi is nishchayatmaka antakarana vritti. So the mind is wavering by nature, and the buddhi is certain by nature. And this is just different. It's just a way to look at how the mind functions. It's really one antakarana. It's really one inner instrument, one tool that we have. And this model, it's said to be two. It's said to be the mind, which is wavering. The mind is responsible for the, you know, the senses take in the objects, shabda, sparsha, rupa, rasa, gandha, but it's the mind that's responsible for taking that form that allows us to actually have knowledge through the senses. It's also the mind that's seen to be the seat of emotions, the seat of the subconscious. And it's also the mind which is said to hold chittam, the memories. And the buddhi also includes the ahankara. It's the rational side. It's the side that is decisive. It's a part of your inner experience, which also includes the ahankara, this I thought, which we talked a bit about in meditation today, wherein there's this I thought, I am all of this. I am the jnanendriyas, I am the karmendriyas, I am the body, I am the characteristics of the body. I am smart, I am stupid, I am happy, I am sad, etc., etc. That is the ahankara, which resides in the buddhi in this 17-part model. In a 19-part model, they break out the chitta, the memory, and the ahankara. But when you talk about 17 parts, you have 5, 5, 5 plus these two. And why are we talking about this? We're talking about this because the context is stula sukshma karna sharirat vyatiriktaha atma satchidananda swarupaha atma aham asmi. I am this atma whose nature is limitless consciousness and existence, which is vyatiriktaha, which is separate, distinct from the stula sharira. Stula sharirat vyatiriktaha. Sukshma sharirat vyatiriktascha. I am also separate from, distinct from this sukshma sharira, the 17-part sukshma sharira, which is made of these subtle elements, which is, again, karma janya, which is born of karma, which is the sadhana, the means for the experience of all these sukha and dukkha, etc. So we have to remember the context that we are separate, we are distinct from all of these. And so what does that mean? This is where the rubber hits the road, really. It's sometimes easier to see myself as being distinct from the stula sharira than the sukshma sharira, because the subtle body is so close to us, right? The subtle body, the mind, the intellect, and to some extent the senses have the capacity, because they're born of sattva guna, which we'll talk about, have the capacity to reflect consciousness. So I am always present in every thought. No thought is away from me. I'm always here. I'm always available to be mistaken to be something else. And we take physical things to be real because they're tangible, and they're not real because they're tangible. They're not unreal, they're mitya. They're neither real nor unreal. They're real because we experience them, but they're not really real because they're time-bound. And when you look at anything in the world, it's just nama matra. It's just name. It's just word and meaning. You look at a table, there's no table there. It's just wood there. And everything is like that in this world. It's mitya. And so to this subtle experience we have, we take it to be so real because it's tangible in a subtle way. We take our emotions to be real. They feel so real. I feel so strongly. I'm so angry. I'm so sad. I'm so happy. I'm so calm. I'm so blissful. I'm so agitated. It's this ahankara, which is this little rascal, which keeps tagging me, seeing all this phenomena in this subtle world, internal subtle world of mine, in this sukshma sharira. And I keep tagging myself to be that. It's like, you know, someone tags you in a Facebook photo. Oh, look, there I am. Oh, look, there I am. Oh, I didn't know I was there. I didn't know I was there. And you're not. You're not. You are there, but that is not you. It's like someone keeps mistagging you, your face on Facebook photos. Like, oh, that's not really me. That appears to be me. That's not really me. So when you say, I am the subtle world, I am the subtle, the attributes of the mind and the body, you know, am I a member of Mensa or am I a member of Densa? I am neither. I can be as dull as a block of wood. I can be as brilliant as Einstein. And I am in truth neither. I am not a genius. I am not an idiot. I'm nothing in between. I am that which sees brilliance and idiocracy. Is that the right word? Idiocy? I'm the one who sees all that. I am the one who's always present here. Aham vyatiriktaha. I am distinct. These are not separate from me, but I am not defined by them. I am not limited by them. They have no existence away from me. And yet it is a great injustice which I do to myself if I seriously believe this ahankara, which wants to identify me with every passing fleeting thought, every passing attribute. How can one time I can be brilliant and another time I can be an idiot? Which am I? Perhaps I'm neither. Perhaps one comes and one goes and I remain witnessing the coming and going of all those states of mind. And we'll see. I am not the waker. I'm not the dreamer. I am not the sleeper. So far what we've done is looked at two-thirds of this model, which presents three bodies, the physical body, the subtle body, and now the karana shariram. That's what we're going to move on to next. Before we move on to that, another interesting aspect is that both of these, both the stula and the sukshma sharira, are said to be karma janyam. Remember, some people take that as sat karma janyam, as born of good actions. And some people say, no, sat just means existing as, it's a present active participle of the dhatu, of the verbal root us, which means to be, so being this, etc. Some people take it just as karma janyam. Some people take it as sat karma janyam. Either way, it amounts to more or less the same thing, just a little different flavor. But both stula and sukshma shariras are both karma janyam, or both karma pala janyam, are both born of the results of previous dharmic and adharmic acts, of previous good and bad acts. And they're given. They're givens in our life. They were earned. The attributes of this physical body, the potential that I'm born with, physically, emotionally, psychologically, intellectually, all those capacities, in some sense, I'm born with, and another sense, it is nurtured by my environment, but the environment in which I'm born is also a result of my karmapala. So whether it's genetic or whether it's environmental, it's all karmapala. Maybe I'm predisposed towards obesity, and no matter what I do, I can't seem to get down to a healthy weight. Or maybe my mother fed me very rich food and I became an obese child or had no value for exercise. Maybe instead of being born to a family of yogis, I was born into a family of bogies and rogies, and I was a couch potato. That's still karma phalam. Those opportunities, how you're shaped, either from the inside out or the outside in, that's all a given, both from the stula and the sukshma perspective. Now, it's, first of all, if it's a given, that should be a dead giveaway that, you know, if something is given, is a given fact, there's two things I can do with that that are healthy. One is to recognize that it's given and offer no resistance. To realize I have a given genetic predisposition towards something. I have certain charms, and I have certain, what's the opposite of charm? I have certain other attributes which are perhaps less charming. I have certain givens in my life. I have certain tapes that somehow I was born with, or environmentally they were generated. Perhaps I'm bipolar. Some people have a physiological basis for the vicissitudes of their emotional life. There's a biochemical reason for some of these. Yeah, and they say about cancer too, other diseases, is that some of it is genetic and some of it is environmental. And how it expresses itself can be a function of lifestyle. So I can have certain disposition towards certain diseases, and if I get lots of exercise and eat the right food and I'm healthy, perhaps those genetic dispositions will not manifest. If, on the other hand, I have certain genetic predispositions to lung cancer, let's say, again, I'm not a biologist or a doctor or anything, but this is my basic simple model of how some of this works, is that if I have certain predispositions to certain types of cancer and I engage in unhealthy lifestyles, you know, no exercise, I eat a lot of fat and I smoke and I drink and I eat meat, all of those help with the expression of these particular genes, and therefore I'm more likely to get these diseases. So some of these are given. Some of what I see internally and externally, what I see in my life and what I see internally, are just givens over which we have no control. They just came with a package. They're prarabdha. There's different types of karma, which we'll talk about later on in this text. And one is prarabdha, which is the packaging of our punya and papam, which account for our opportunities and experiences in this life. And some of it we have no control over. Who our brothers and sisters are, that's a given. Who our parents are, that's a given. Whether we're born in a wealthy or a poverty-stricken environment. Whether I was born with 10 fingers or not, that's a given. And so for givens, we can have an emotional resistance, or we can have an emotional acceptance. When you look at it rationally, does it make sense to always feel self-conscious because I was born with perhaps only 9 fingers? That's because if I take myself to be a 9-fingered person, and I have a model that a beautiful person has 10 fingers, I will always be wanting. I'll always be less, and there's nothing I can do about it. So rationally, it makes sense to accept what is, what a given is. And at the same time, in spite of the fact that there are certain invariable givens, there are a number of variable givens. There are certain things that I'm born to, predisposed to, that I actually have choice over. And that allows me to manifest, to change, to create changes in my life, in my attitude, in my actions, in my environment, in my pursuits, in my understanding, in my education level, in my health level. I can make a number of changes in a number of different areas that help create and, in a sense, express, like certain genes express in a certain way. So too, you can manipulate your internal environment, right? You can promote sattvaguna. You can promote a calmness. You can promote generosity. You can promote an open heart through certain practices. You can invoke and express quietude by seeing the pressure to talk and working with vak tapas, with the discipline of speech, making sure that your speech does not incite emotions that are hurtful in other people, and that your words are sweet and they're truthful and they're necessary and they're beneficial. You can invoke compassion by giving. You can change your bhavana, you can change your attitude, so you're not born as a non-changeable tamoguna pradhana purushaha. You're not born always and are necessarily stuck in your external circumstances or internal circumstances. And yet, this is sort of a fine line. How do you accept what is and still work to change? In your heart, you can accept all your apparent limitations, because you're always going to be limited. As a jiva, your mind is always going to be limited. Your emotions, at one time or another, are going to get away from you. Your body is inevitably going to fall sick. It's all going to happen. So all of this can be accepted with complete equanimity and complete equipoise and complete love and acceptance to whatever is happening. And yet, I can choose how to behave. I can choose where to place my attention. So even though the sthula and sukshma sharira are karma janyam and seem to have invariable aspects to them, there's also the possibility for change and for choice. Now, another step in understanding of the sthula and sukshma sharira being karma janyam is understanding that what is given is karmapala, right? Is the result of previous actions. And who is the karmapala data? Who is the giver of that karmapala? It's no other than the Lord. It's no other than Bhagawan. So everything that comes to me in the form of the givens in the sthula and sukshma sharira is Ishvara Prasadam. It's all grace. It's given by the Lord. What need have I to resist? It's all presence. Ishvara decided to send me this present at one time and this other present at another time. He decided to send me this very helpful, concerned, loving person, brilliant person in my life. And at another time, perhaps, decided to send me this problematic, this difficult person, this person who is perhaps demanding a lot or does not see things clearly. And they're both equally prasadam. They're both givens in my life. Now, I can choose who I bring into my world, into my sphere, into my life. But at the same time, I can love each equally. Because all I see is Bhagavan. It's all given by the Lord. It's all karmapala janyam. It's all karmapalam. And the karmapala datta, the giver of all of my circumstances, opportunity, and hindrances, is the Lord. You know, we have to remember that Ganesh removes all obstacles, but he's the one who put them there in the first place. He's not completely innocent. So this idea that this sukshma and sthula sharira are given, if you see it as they're given as prasadam, then if you see even the mental habits that you have that you don't like, even your reactivity, even your constrained, closed heart sometimes. You know, you want your heart to be open and loving and accepting, and sometimes it just shrinks and you feel small and you look at people with beady eyes and distrustful, or however the constrained heart expresses itself in your life. Even that is prasadam. Because it's a tendency that you have. You don't choose to be angry. Anger comes over you. It's prasadam. you don't choose. It doesn't ask for permission before it comes. You can go, oh, yes, this is my choice. I will now be angry. No, it comes. Your sensitivity to certain areas that anger you is a given in your life, regardless of where you are on the spiritual journey. And yet, you can choose through intention and through sankalpa and through prayer to change that, to offer that, and to learn to manage that reactive mind, that reactive heart, and to transform anger into love, at least into acceptance and non-resistance. So we don't need to be afraid. We don't need to be self-condemning about anything that happens in our hearts or minds. We don't need to identify with anything that is obtaining in our inner world. And yet we do have some responsibility to at least manage the emotions that come that may engender adharmic actions. So this, the given aspect of the stula and sukshma sharira, that offers an opportunity for us to live lives of a karma yogi. One way to look at karma yoga is to see that I only have the capacity to act in a dharmic way. And what comes is prasadam, is grace. And so these givens are grace. The fact that I'm not as genius as I might be, the fact that I'm not as articulate as I might want to be, or I'm not as beautiful or tall or white or brown, those are givens. And they're just my vibhuti, even my frailties, even my doshas, even my faults, even my blemishes. It's all vibhuti because it's all Bhagavan's vibhuti. He decided to give me this body this time. I can take good care of it. I have a responsibility to honor this incarnation in the sense of taking care of this body. And this stula sharira, by eating right and exercising and going to the doctors and getting take my medication, whatever I may need to do. And I have an obligation to attend to and to care for this emotional body, this mental body, the sukshma sharira, right? I need to be as compassionate to this emotional, intellectual being that I am, in some sense, as I do this and am towards this physical body. So with that, let us go on to the section on the karana shariram. Kim karana shariram? What is the causal body? It's not casual body. Pooja Swamiji says he's had people come up to him and say, oh, what's the casual body? This is not the casual body. This is the karana shariram. It is a karana and it's a shariram. It's called the body a shariram because it's responsible for certain experience. And it's karanam, it's a cause, because it's the cause of the other two bodies. And we'll see that clearly here. So it is anirvacha, anadi, avidyarupam, that's one thing, sharira dvayasya, karanamatram, that's the second part, sat, swarupa ajnanam, that's the third part. And nirvikalpaka rupam is the fourth part of the definition. Yat asti tat karana shariram. So Sanskrit has this beautiful usage of the relative and correlative pronouns. So yat asti, that which exists as defined by these four phrases, tat, that, yat tat, that which, that is, yat tat, yat asti, that which is all these things, tat karana shariram, that is the karana shariram. So let's look at each of these. Sharira dvayasya karana matram sat is one of the phrases there. So we need to look at what is a cause and what is an effect. Because sharira dvayasya karana matram sat, being the mere cause, karana matram, of the sharira dvayasya, of the sharira dvayasya, of the twofold body, of the previous two bodies we just talked about, the stula and the sukshma sharira. So what is cause and what is effect? Karana means cause. Karya means effect. cause is that from which something is created. A karya, an effect, is that which is created. Karana is unmanifest. Karya is manifest. So if you look at a clay pot, what's the karana? What's the cause? It's the clay. What's the karya? What's the effect? It is the pot. Now, is anything actually created when you create a pot? Is anything substantial created? No. What's created is nama matra, is nama rupa, is a name and a form and a function, a functional form that we give a name to. There's nothing new that's actually created. There's nothing substantial that's actually created there. The effect, in effect, is actually a transformation of the cause. The clay is transformed into the effect. You could say that the pot is inherent in the clay. In other words, the clay has the potential to become a pot or a bowl or a cup or a plate. One way to look at this cause-effect relationship is that the process of creation is only a transformation from the karana avastha, from the unmanifest or dormant state, to karya avastha, to the manifest state. Let me say that again. So creation can be seen as the transformation of the karana avastha, the unmanifest or dormant state, into a karya avastha, the state of being manifest. And there is no substantial difference between the cause and the effect. For example, the seed and the tree. What's the cause of a mango tree? It's the mango stone, the mango seed. The karya, the effect, is a transformation of what is dormant in the seed. The growth of the mango tree from the seed, the creation of that tree, is a transformation of the unmanifest into the manifest. It's making manifest the unmanifest. In a mango seed, let's say a redwood, redwood seeds are very tiny, and yet from a redwood seed comes a 150, 200 foot tree. A tree so large, a redwood tree is so amazing, a tree so large that it does not have the capacity to pull water up its whole trunk. It grows so tall that it cannot bring water from its trunk up to its upper portion. And so that's why some redwood trees only grow in certain areas, say the coastal redwoods, because they rely on the fog. The redwood trees rely on the fog to bring moisture to the upper part of the tree. And all this comes from a tiny, tiny seed. Now, if I were to plant a redwood seed and I got mangoes, there would be disorder in the universe and great consternation in my soul. But we know that when I plant a redwood seed, eventually there will be a redwood tree, all things being equal. When I plant an acorn, there will be an oak tree. When I plant mango avocado stones, I will get a mango or avocado tree. So one way to look at this is that the Lord has the best compression algorithms available. You know, compression algorithm. So like when you record music, you record at a certain sample rate at a certain bit depth. Geeky stuff. And it's meant to create a digital image of an analog sound. And yet these are recorded at CD level at a certain frequency and a certain bit depth. There's a certain fidelity. And yet these files can be very large. And so there's this notion of a compression algorithm, which takes this large file and makes it into a small file. They do some amazing things to do this, and it can either be lossy or lossless. So a lossy compression algorithm takes away a lot of the data. Now, if it's done well, you usually can't hear much difference because the mind filters out, the ear filters out, and there's a lot of data that's actually not needed for us to hear what's being done sonically. what's being done in the music or in the spoken word. Some argue that's not exactly the case. And then that would be a lossy algorithm, a lossy compression algorithm. And a lossless compression algorithm is one where no information is lost, it's just compressed down. So you can think of a seed as having the best compression algorithm there is, because all the data, the lossless compression algorithm, all the data you need to grow a giant redwood tree, which lasts hundreds and hundreds of years, is in this tiny seed. It's all right there. Perhaps a better way would be to look at it as an instruction set. That is not the compression of a whole tree in there, but it has the instruction set to build a tree. So this is what we mean when we talk about a karana and a karya. And note that the karya is unmanifest in the cause. He says here, nirvikalpaka rupam. It's in the form, it's in an unmanifest, nirvikalpaka. Vikalpa means a difference. Nirvikalpa means having no difference, undifferentiated. Nirvikalpaka rupam means having an undifferentiated form. So in the seed, you cannot cut a seed in half and see, oh, well, there's where the root is, and there's where the branches are going to be, and oh, all these little tiny dots are going to be the leaves. No, it's nirvikalpaka rupam. The cause is undifferentiated. What makes creation? That cause becomes differentiated. The potential in that cause expresses and it becomes differentiated. From the seed comes the root, and then comes the sprout, and then comes the little branches and the leaves, etc., etc. So in the seed, you cannot pinpoint all these little parts, these sections of the seed that will become the various differentiated branches and leaves and trunk and roots of the tree. But it contains a potential for all of them. So the cause is nirvikalpa. The vikalpas are not perceptible. And the effect is called savikalpa. It has the divisions. The divisions are perceptible. It's differentiated into this creation of the tree. So the karana shariram is, from a causal perspective, the unmanifest state of the stula and sukshma sharira. So if you imagine a condition where this physical and subtle body are unmanifest, that is the causal body. That is what's called the karana sharira. And the gross physical and the subtle bodies are savikalpaka. We have 10 fingers and 10 toes and et cetera, et cetera. It is differentiated, whereas the karana sharira is undifferentiated. It is also called anirvacha anadi avidyarupam. This is beautiful. It is of the nature, rupam, it is in the form of avidya, of ignorance, which is anirvacha and anadi. So again, we're talking about this causal body, right? It's causal. Why is it causal? It's the cause of the other two bodies, of the physical and subtle body. Why is that? From a substance perspective, it's the substance which differentiates into these other bodies, these other two bodies. So it's the karana for these other two bodies. But also ignorance. Now, the word avidya here can be used in a couple of different ways. It can be used as a technical term, and it can just be seen as ignorance itself, because it's ignorance which is the cause of the jiva. I don't see myself as I am. I see a limited being. I take myself. I conclude that I am a limited being, and therefore I'm able to superimpose all these limiting characteristics on myself. I don't know the truth of myself. And so on that blank canvas of ignorance, I can impose all sorts of notions. So that avidya is anirvacha and anadi. Avidya, ignorance. Does ignorance have a beginning? If ignorance has a beginning, what existed before ignorance? It would have to be knowledge. that's not the case. Look at this. So, Vridhir Ad Aich, the first sutra of the Panini Vyakarana Sutras, of Panini's grammatical sutras, is Vridhir Ad Aich. Vridhihi, the word Vridhihi, I will call these things Vridhi, namely At and Aich. These vowels, At and Aich, these are called Vridhi. So now you know Vridhir Ad Aich is the first sutra of the Paninia Vyakarana Sutras. How long were you ignorant of that? Let's assume you don't know Panini. You may know Panini. I hope you do. It's beautiful. But let's say you didn't know Panini. How long were you ignorant of that Vridhir Ad Aich? Forever. Did that ignorance have a beginning? No. That ignorance is anadi. That ignorance is beginningless. Did the ignorance have an end? Yes. When did it end? Oh, about a minute and 17 seconds ago when you heard Vridhir Ad Aich. So this avidya is anadi. It's beginningless. But it is santa. It is anadi, but it is santa. Anta means end. Santa means it has an end because it goes in the wake of knowledge, just as darkness goes when you shine a flashlight in a dark corner. And this avidya is called anirvacha. Ignorance as we know it is anirvacha. Now, vacya means speakable, to be said, to be spoken, capable of being described. Nirvacha means that which can be categorically described, that which can be categorically defined with certainty. Anirvacha is that which cannot be categorically defined. We want to live in a very structured world where we know what everything is. We know the whole game. We can categorically say something. We can categorically say something else. Regarding the existence of avidya, we cannot say categorically that it exists, and we cannot categorically say that it does not exist. It is mithya. It is neither truly existent, sat, nor tucham, non-existence. We can't say it doesn't exist because we see its effect all around us. In fact, the stula and sukshma sharira are born of ignorance, are born of this karana sharira whose nature is avidya, and that avidya, which we're describing as anirvacha, we talked about it as anirvachaniyam, is mithya in previous classes. So we cannot say that avidya, ignorance, doesn't exist, because we see the products of it. We're the living products of it. And yet we cannot say that it truly exists because it's santa, because it has an end. It goes. It does not exist. It's not non-existent, like the horns of a hare or the son of a woman who's never had children, but it is neither truly existent nor non-existent. It's somewhat like a dream. Does a dream exist? Well, we experience it. We experience this world, we experience this body, it all seems to exist, and yet when you look at it, it doesn't exist. It cannot be said to be abhidhita. It is all negatable. It is all deconstructible into its elemental parts, and those are deconstructible, etc., etc., etc. So that's one way to look at anirvacha anadi avidya rupam karana shariram. It can also be seen from a more technical perspective, where when we say that the table exists, we're living in a world of ignorance, because what really exists is the wood. They're not the same thing. The wood and the table are not the same thing, because if they were identical, then if the wood and the table were identical, if I saw a piece of just a 2x4 on the ground, I'd say, oh, there's a table. But we don't say that. If I saw a metal table, I'd say, oh, look at the wood. We don't say that. They're not identical. So what really is there is that there's wood in the form of a table. When I live in the world of tables and chairs, wooden tables and wooden chairs, then I'm really living in a world of ignorance within this example. If I live in a world of wood, which happened to have the form of a table or happened to have the form of a chair, then I'm knowledgeable. And what is dismissed when knowledge takes place, that there's nothing there but wood, what is dismissed is mithya. The table is, in a sense, dismissed by the knowledge that there's only wood there. The chairness is dismissed as being real because all I see is wood there. So knowledge removes, in one sense, mithya. And knowledge removes avidya. So therefore, both ignorance and mithya vastu are dismissed by knowledge. And therefore, the mithya vastus are sometimes called, figuratively, ignorance, because they're a product of ignorance, and they're dismissed by knowledge. All anatma, everything other than myself, is a function of ignorance. The stula and sukshma sharira is a product of ignorance. And so ignorance causes not only the identification with this stula and sukshma sharira, but it's actually, this stula and sukshma sharira are actually the manifestation of that avyakta, of that unmanifest karana sharira. You may have heard of the term maya, right? Maya is a creative force that is responsible for this variegated world that we live in. And from a vyashti or microcosmic perspective, from the perspective of me as an individual, that same maya is technically termed avidya. From the perspective of the macrocosm, from the perspective of all of creation, from Ishwara's srishti perspective, from the perspective of Ishwara's creation, that same power is called maya, which is responsible for all this. Bhagavan is called a mayavi. He's the one who wields this maya. Now, the difference is that avidya has two aspects. Avidya has the avarana shakti and the vikshepa shakti. Ignorance has the capacity to conceal and to project. So when I walk down a street and I see a snake by the side of the road, and all that's there is a rope, what's happening is that my ignorance of the truth of that rope hides the rope and allows me to project a snake on it. Avidya, the concealing power of avidya, conceals the truth of that rope and allows me to project a snake on it. So there's two aspects. There's the covering layer and there's the creative layer. There's the part that conceals and there's the part that projects for me as an individual. For Bhagavan, that avarana shakti is not there. For the Lord, through his maya, he projects this entire creation. There is no difference between the Lord and this entire creation. But I have the avarana shakti working in maya vidya. In the Lord's maya, there is no avarana shakti. There is no ignorance there. It's all just a manifestation of knowledge. Really, this entire creation is manifest knowledge. It's a manifestation of Bhagavan's knowledge, right? It's a manifestation of his instruction set, if you will. So that's a technical way to look at avidya as the karana sharira vis-a-vis the vyashti and smashti, the same power seen from the perspective of the individual in contrast with the same power seen from perspective of the total of the samashti. And it is, as I mentioned, anadi. This ignorance is anadi. I think we'll stop there. Next week we can finish this part, just wrap up the karana sharira, and then go on to the avastatraya sakshitvam, the statement that the atma, the self, is a witness to the three states of experience: waking, dream, and deep sleep. And you'll notice that in the order of things, in the initial sentence that we're examining in detail here, he first introduces the threefold body and then the five koshas and then the three states. But what he does is he reverses those last two, because the three states of experience correspond very nicely with the three bodies. And so we'll see that next week. Let's take a moment. Om Swasti Prajavyah Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmane Vyashivamasti Nityam Loka Subhasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parjanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamcho Barahitaha Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchit dukkha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya, om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate, purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vishishyate, Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om Om Tat Sat Sarvam Ishvararpanamastu.
It was wonderful.
Oh, good.
It was so good. Really, I like that unmanifest to manifest was great.
Oh, good.
It was so great.
Oh, good. I'm glad it made sense.
I really like that.
I get a chance to immerse myself in, you know, in Pooja Swamiji's classes. I listen to his classes and read the text, yeah. and try to assimilate it and try to be able to express it. That's just such a nice way to spend one's time with the Shastra.
That is so good, yes. So that is why once the understanding takes place, there is no more birth for that jiva.
Yeah, because you know, the length of the physical body, manifestation of each physical body is what, 60, 70, 80, 90 years.
Yes.
The length of the sukshma sharira, it actually is said to have to become unmanifest the time of pralaya. So when there's a new age that comes about, that sukshma sharira is born of the karana sharira. So that individuality is still there. But it actually, the sukshma sharira gets absorbed into that potential cause at the end of each age. But it's the karana sharira, when that, which is in the form of ignorance, when that goes, then the very basis for reincarnating individual is gone. It's a sukshma sharira that goes from birth to birth to birth, from body to body to body. And the only time that goes, it appears to come and go, when the creation comes and goes, but still the only time it actually disappears is when its cause, which is ignorance, goes. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah. But the physical body is the one who has the capacity to know, so that the sukshma sharira doesn't.
The best way to say it is that it's only when we have a physical human birth do we have the capacity to know. It is the subtle body that, it's in the mind that knowledge takes place.
Yes.
And that's where consciousness is reflected in the sukshma sharira. And that has the capacity to remove that ignorance. The experience of the karana sharira is the ignorance, right? I am ignorant. That is the experience of the karana sharira, just as deep sleep is the experience of just total ignorance. Total joyful ignorance, in fact. It's correlated with the ananda kosha, but it's just complete ignorance. So when we remove ignorance of myself, then all that's left is me. and I'm free. And it's just the prarabdha that keeps me going through the rest of this particular life.
And what are avatars?
Avatars are said to be incarnations of Bhagawan in a deliberate form. Avatars, they're not a jiva that need to come to this earth to exhaust punya and papam.
That is the sukshma shariras.
Yeah, well, there's no ignorance. There's nothing. It's all Bhagawan. So the notion of what does it mean for the Lord to be born in the physical world when he's already this everything is a very interesting question.
Yeah. I am thinking that the avatars have also the sukshma sharira.
They have the whole getup.
They also have. It's weird.
They have the physical body and they have the sukshma sharira. I mean, they have senses. They can walk around. They have a mind.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Emotions. They have it all. It's just that they're said not to be a product of ignorance. Our continuing samsara, our reincarnation again and again, is a product of our ignorance of ourselves. Whereas for Bhagawan, there's no ignorance.
Yes.
They're just said to manifest, like Krishna says, whenever there's adharma, I'll come to fix that. And the whole Vishnu avatara, all those avatars, some are very focused. Some are for very specific purposes.
Yeah.
And some are to show the way, like Rama taught dharma and Krishna taught the Gita.
We are so fortunate.
We're looking forward to next week.
Yeah.
Next week.
Good. Thank you. You're very kind.
Thank you.
Om Tat Sat.
Thank you.